We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to another episode of In the Know. This time we are a special hurricane slash post hurricane edition. Mason, we talk about the weather every time on the podcast. We might as well just convert to a Weather Channel podcast itself. But I think you stayed pretty dry in Chicago, right?
We're in the 90s up here. I say 90s. We are around 90 in the at the hottest point of the day, but yeah, played baseball this weekend. It was perfect weather, really hot. But I'm someone who misses the southern heat every day, and so anytime we get that kind of weather up here, I actually cherish it a little bit, which is probably weird, but that's just me.
You know, the winters have to be god awful for you to miss the southern heat. That. We were mostly fine here in New Orleans for the hurricane. I lost internet for a little while, but that's the extent of it. Wasn't really much rain, hasn't really been much wind. It's been fine, which, you know, I guess we're definitely lucky to experience. Hopefully other parts of Louisiana are the same. Wednesday was worse when all the streets flooded because of the actual rain and not the storm. That was really bad. A whole lot of people I know, their cars and other things got really messed up because of that. But just another day in New Orleans, I guess.
All right.
That being said, speaking of things making it rain, Nikhil Alexander Walker
in done.
Summer League. The Pelicans Summer League has been really good. Let's talk about Summer League. Let's bring it on back because we haven't really talked about the Pels in quite some time. So let's bring it on back to the first day where Zion Williamson actually played. Did you get an opportunity to watch any of that? And what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was in Atlanta for work. And I was in the hotel lobby with this guy sitting by himself watching this game on my computer. And I was, it was, oh, actually, No, I'm thinking about the Jackson Hayes game. I did watch the Zion game. I don't really remember where I was, but it was a quick few minutes of him playing. He did some very mean things to Knox for the Knicks and exited stage left. I'm pretty sure everyone realizes that knee injury was maybe pretty much a fake injury in my belief, but I know he didn't look like he was in the greatest shape, but I think anyone who is really concerned about that is probably just looking for something to complain about, you know?
Yeah, did you, I guess before we get into his playing shape and all of that, did you see anything that would change your opinion on his outlook in any case at all?
No. I mean, I think this is a guy who he's invited to Team USA camp, and I think the team knows that, and they're – honestly, I if it weren't for the fact that this – he was the reason people spent $100 on tickets. I don't, not that I think that drove any decisions for the Pelicans, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't even play a single minute on the summer league team and just focuses on Team USA camp. But I don't know. I was trying not to rush any judgment based on anything I saw in that game. I mean, do you feel any differently than that?
I mean, he played 9 minutes of summer league. If right. you could draw any type of conclusion from that, you're probably a functional idiot. I'm sorry.
Or you wanted us to draft Morant.
Right. One of the two.
Actually, that's probably, yeah, there's a correlation there.
People were talking about, well, he got blocked by Mitchell Robinson a few times, and his shot was slow. And it's like, well, Mitchell Robinson also picked up 3 fouls on Zion in 9 minutes. Zion shot 6 free throws in 9 minutes, which is absolutely absurd. And there was this moment where Zion basically caught the ball at the top of the key, had an open lane. He took like 2 hop steps into Mitchell Robinson, tried to go straight up around where the free throw line is, and he got pushed back all the way into the stanchion and like into the stands. Like, you're not stopping this dude. He's going to be fine, especially once he actually gets in game shape and he gets to have more reps at practice.
Yep.
Griff did come out in various media platforms and say that, you know, they were being precautionary. Abundance of precaution or caution is the term that Griffin used. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how Zion still has some work to do from a conditioning standpoint and getting in shape. And I think that is definitely a fair assessment. Coach K also said the same thing, that Zion's been on this award circuit since the end of March and hasn't really had time to play 5-on-5. And he's not necessarily in playing shape physically, but also mentally. And I think the Pelicans are doing the right thing by shutting him down, because every possession that he plays in a space where he's just not ready is a possession that you risk injury for. So, you know, it's summer league. Everyone got to see 4 dunks and 1 absolute brutality with Kevin Knox, but the Pelicans are definitely making the right choice by not playing Zion any further. Mm-hmm. I want to move on and talk about the rest of the summer league stuff before we get into Griff. I guess we can kind of talk about it side by side, depending on what topics come up. But the following game, well, I guess before we move on, that game, Frank Jackson had 30 points. He started popping in the second quarter and got it rolling in the third quarter as well. He shot really well from beyond the arc. He had a pretty nasty dunk in transition, and the game was ended prematurely based on an earthquake, which is not something that happens every day. led to some great memes, including David Griffin's face, because the camera happened to catch his reaction immediately as it was happening. But do you have any Frank Jackson thoughts?
No, well, I do, but I think he's continuing to do the things that we knew he could do, especially against summer league competition, where now you're kind of more of the veteran guy among the summer league players. And this is nothing Frank Jackson has done in summer league makes me any more comforted about him as an NBA player, if that makes sense. I mean, I think he's, the fact that he can score and score efficiently against summer league competition doesn't surprise me. And I think that should be expected, but I don't know. I think I'm still a little shaky on translating that to the backup point guard position for New Orleans. And obviously that's less of a need when you've got a guy like Jrue Holiday, or even a guy like Brandon Ingram to play spot minutes with the second unit. But I think backup point guard still is a need for this team. And Frank Jackson maybe he shows something in preseason and starts to look like he's turning a corner, but I'm still not really sold on him as a guy I'm comfortable with or confident in at that spot based on summer league.
Yeah, Frank is interesting because he had 30 points, but he had 0 assists that night. I mean, he was putting shots up, and they were going in, but I think it's a fair question to ask, does he make his teammates better? Is he going to provide value when his jumper isn't falling? You know, excuse me. But I think, I don't know. It was only one game of Frank. Again, too early to say anything conclusively, but you're right. I don't think he's done anything really to mitigate long-term concerns about him. But I guess if you're a fan of him, he did enough to reinforce the notion of the things he does well. So
that's what summer league's for, man. Just reinforcing opinions.
Exactly. You see what you want to see.
Yep.
Moving on. Next,
I did like what I think this is. I can't remember who he said it in reference to, but I thought the point McNamara made was really good in the sense that you can find out. Summer league can teach you who's not going to cut it, but he's not going to. It's not going to really teach you who's going to be great, right? And I agree very strongly with that.
Yeah. I mean, just look at Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart, who were the last two Summer League MVPs. They balled out in Summer League and are fine as professional players, but they're not anything special per se, right? So,
yep, you're gonna make some Lonzo stands upset with that comment if they're none of them probably listen to this, so whatever.
This podcast is not sponsored by the Big Brawler brand. The next game, I was actually in town in Vegas for that game. Me and Ryan Hebert from Bourbon Street Shots decided to check it out, as well as a few folks from the Bird Rights. They had a quite a big contingent over there. It was a really boring game against the Wizards, where the Pelicans didn't really have any offensive talent on the floor outside of maybe Kenrich. And I guess Trayvon Blewett went off that game and brought back his fans, which are something. They'll have Trayvon Blewett fans.
That exists. Bunch. That's a thing.
But it was a really boring game. I had more fun just being there and talking to people and soaking in the experience and watching that actual game. So it was fine. I don't really want to talk about it that much unless you do.
The game, though. I would like to, and I think the listeners would love to hear a little bit more about your non-basketball experience at Summer League thing, whatever you feel like sharing. And probably since the game wasn't much to talk about, anything else from Summer League specifically that you think's worth discussing?
Yeah, so the Summer League is, and I'm sure everyone is kind of peripherally aware of this, but it's kind of like the who's who of the NBA is there in Vegas for those 2 weeks or however long that they're into. Now you're talking, you know, media associated with the team, guys that cover from all different platforms, but also executives, coaches, players, the whole nine yards. Everyone is there, and it's a really good opportunity to try to network and get to know more people. And if you already kind of have a network, use that to meet people that you didn't know before. So I had a really good time. I caught up with a few friends from around the country, and they were able to introduce me to a few folks. The Pelicans also had an introductory press conference for the new rookies after the trade was made official. And it was Didi, Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and Trajan Langdon at the podium. And that was a really cool event because there weren't that many people there from a media perspective. If you're in New Orleans, you know, everyone's going to come out. You have all the radios, the TVs, you know, the Advocate, formerly what was known as the Times Pick, and you know, all the blogs, everyone's going to come out and try to cover this event, as well as, you know, people that can make it down from Baton Rouge or whatnot. But in Vegas, it's really whoever's just there. And it was just like us and the Bird Rights folks and Will Guillory and like Jim Eichenhofer from Pelicans.com. Oh, and Malika Andrews with ESPN, who I don't know if she's like permanently assigned as a Pelicans reporter, but she has been covering a lot of the Pelicans events recently now that the Pelicans have Zion. And she's a fantastic follow and reporter if you don't follow her. So definitely shout out to her. But it was a very kind of intimate event. Got an opportunity to ask a lot of questions, but it was so intimate that the Pelicans staff, like, attending and watching the press conference, like Griff and Swin Cash and all of them, outnumbered, like, the media folk, I want to say. And so it was cool because, you know, we were able to introduce ourselves and talk to them on a personal level, like, outside of the press conference when it was over. and just kind of like shoot the shit a little bit. And so that was cool. I mean, that was, I don't think you get the opportunity to talk to the Pelicans brass like that every day in a very casual setting. So that was definitely a good experience. And but other than that, there was, you go out to like pretty much like any like hotel on the strip. I think this year the central place where all the NBA people were at was the Aria, Aria Hotel. And I ran into so many people there. I just did not have the guts to introduce myself to. The funniest part I want to say was I saw Shams walking around and I walked by him. I didn't realize it was him until I walked by him. And I was walking around in a shirt that said The Athletic. And he kind of like looked at my shirt and like looked at me. And then like, I was like, should I introduce myself? And I was like, nah, this is really cool. I'm Schmidt and I'm wearing an Athletic shirt. This dude's going to think I'm like a knockoff version of him, or I just kept moving. but there were a lot of people there. I mean, I saw Rich Cho out there. I saw Tayshaun Prince, you know, lots of Grizzlies representation. But there was a lot of players out there. A lot of execs out there, a lot of coaches out there. And I think like any time you walk through that hotel during those 2 weeks, you probably could have ran into somebody. So that was cool. And I think it's a really bizarre experience where just the NBA world comes together. I definitely recommend experiencing it for yourself if you haven't at some point. So I definitely recommend that.
Yeah, it's a, so I've been twice. Once just kind of as a so the first time I went was like in 2012. One of my good friends from Tulane, of course, had his bachelor party out in Vegas. It happened to be that weekend. And so I flew up like a day or two early. And so I literally just did 24 hours of summer league, just one day. And but like the cool thing was, even though I only did a little bit of summer league, to your point, you could see everyone. Like the two people I remember seeing that I was, that it wasn't, I don't think it was as big 7 years ago as it is now, but I remember seeing Sean Marks walking around. I can't remember if it was what his role was at the time. The main reason I thought twice about it is because he played with the Hornets for a little bit, and so I was like, oh hey, that's Sean Marks, he played for New Orleans for a little while. and also I remember had a similar experience to you with Zach Lowe. I remember seeing him specifically because he was still with Sports Illustrated, and I was like, I should go introduce myself, I should go say hi. And I didn't actually do it.
That reminds me, we didn't realize this. Orion and I were in the elevator for our hotel coming down, and we got hop in, and there's a dude, and he's like, hey, what's up? And just kind of like trying to make small talk with us. We later realized that was Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. And I was like, I can't believe I did not recognize Kevin O'Connor. I just thought it was some random dude trying to be friendly. And like, we were both like, I think I was wearing a Zion shirt and Ryan was wearing some other Pelicans gear. And I think he realized, like, you know, we were NBA fans, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, that was Kevin O'Connor. And then Ryan was later in the care, in the concourse, or you know, at the arena for summer league, and he saw Kevin O'Connor, and it was like, oh yeah, he made the connection. I was like, damn, Kevin O'Connor was in our elevator at the same time. So that was cool. Also, like, Yao Ming was leaving one of the games, and he like walked 6 inches away from me, and I have never felt so small in my life. I mean, like, I have covered you know, NBA players, and Anthony Davis is a huge human being, but Yao Ming is just on a different level. That man is absolutely massive.
Yeah. The closest I've ever been to that is, I remember I was, for when I was at UT, I covered a Pelicans Spurs game, and I was on the floor hanging out with Joel, and Tim Duncan walks by, and like, Tim Duncan's over 7 feet. And that's probably the closest, but even that is no comparison to,
like, 6'12".
To Yao Ming. Yeah. When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. Time-consuming, expensive, so many carriers to choose from. How do you know you're making the best choice? That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making them really easy to manage from any device, even your cell phone. And right now, Blue Wire podcast listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all of the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best ship rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Blue. That's ShipStation.com, then enter promo code Blue. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen.
In any case, we can steer this back towards the actual games played. So after the introduction, the new rookies very quickly took the court, and it didn't take long for them to start absolutely wowing people. Now, I was always ridiculously high on Jackson Hayes. I admit, I thought Nikhil Alexander-Walker was just not going to be good. I didn't see it. I didn't think that he had the athleticism or the burst to kind of keep up in the NBA. I didn't know if his shot would translate. And I think I called him like Etuan Moore who can dribble. And I was like, yeah, like Zillin Cheatham's going to have a better NBA career because he does more things that are needed in an NBA court. Holy shit, was I wrong. He made me eat my words basically like two possessions in. He nailed a three, and then he made some ridiculous passes. And throughout summer league, this guy has just been flat out the best player in Vegas. And I don't think it is close. And I don't care if Mac doesn't like me using that term, but he's been that good, and he's made me completely reevaluate how I viewed him as a prospect, because I never knew he had the ability to take on this lead guard responsibility. I knew he could pass well, but this is, I think, another level. Because I don't think Virginia Tech used him in as many pick and rolls, as well as with a competent roller like Jackson Hayes, as he's seeing here in summer league. And I think that the high-paced Pelican style of basketball has really kind of unlocked lanes and driving lanes and passing lanes that he just did not have in college. And man, I'm a huge fan of what he's been doing. And bigger than that, I think he's been arguably more impressive on the defensive end of the floor, where you can look at the steals that he's getting and the blocks that he's getting, which is cool, which is fine and exciting, right? But it's the awareness where he's helping at the right times. He's tagging and recovering out to the 3-point line. With no official practices. He is unscreenable. Him and Didi Lozada, you cannot screen them no matter how hard you try. They just have like this supernatural ability to sense the screen coming, and they jump out ahead of it and make the right defensive read there every time. It's so impressive. But so yeah, the first game, obviously Nikhil went off. Jackson Hayes went off. He had 28 points, absolute monstrous dunk against the whatever random defender Chicago was put on him. He had like 9 dunks by the end of the game, and he had a shot that he blocked with his elbow, which is absolute. I mean, he you talk about Zion being a freak, but you know, this guy is a legit 7 foot and he can windmill from the free throw line. This guy is a freak. He was very exciting, and Didi Lozada was very, very exciting too. He's looked like a very prototypical 3-and-D player where, again, making great plays defensively, moving off the ball really well, knocking down his looks that were coming in rhythm. They didn't look unsustainable per se. His shooting form looks nice. It was very exciting. What were your thoughts on the debut, the rookie's debut?
Yeah, I mean, I echo a lot of that, and I will say I didn't know enough to know about Alexander Walker when he got drafted. I mean, I tried to read stuff as quickly as possible to get up to speed, and it seemed like there was no one hated the pick, and a couple people did love the pick, but generally speaking, it just seemed like made sense. Trust Griff. It wasn't like he was taken way too high or way too low. Just kind of wait and see how things play out and what he looks like in summer league. And to your point, yeah, I haven't been as close to summer league to know that he's been far and away the best player, but I'm happily going to take your word for it on that. And Jackson Hayes, I don't know if I was quite as high on him as you were. I'm a Texas guy, so I love the fact that we went and got him, but the one thing I liked seeing from him early on, it's probably a little cliche, but just seeing him comfortable taking jumpers from, I mean, forget the 1 3-pointer he hit, but just being comfortable taking from shots from mid-range and at least showing that he's going to be able to develop that. And so he shot a good free throw percentage in college. So even though it was only one season, I think he projected well there and thought that he could become a pretty decent shooter, at least one team's had to respect. But I feel like I'm seeing it even faster than I expected for him. And you know, I'm not saying he's going to be a guy who gets real meaningful minutes in year one. And that's even if he doesn't, that's totally okay. It doesn't change my outlook on him overall. But I think both these guys are showing all the right things early on, and it's really exciting. I mean, this team. This Pelicans organization over the last decade or so, obviously not a ton of draft picks to begin with, but apart from those, slam dunks like Zion or AD, there hasn't been a lot to like. And it seems like it's already pretty clear that things are changing in that way too, as in addition to all the other ways that this franchise is changing. So really, really happy with the early returns.
I mean, him hitting that three, I absolutely lost my shit because he kind of like broke and play in transition. There wasn't really a half-court offense set, and whoever had the ball like drove it to the rim, didn't see an opening there. They pitched it back out to Jackson Hayes, who catches like kind of behind him, does this 360, sets, like takes a dribble, just launches it with no hesitation, and it's absolutely wet. It just goes in, and I'm like, no way that you did that. What am I watching here? I talked about how he projects to be someone like, I think he can add the pick and pop mid range very quickly. I think he can add a face up game, pretty quickly, especially with one dribble moves. I did not expect him to launch a three in summer league with such confidence, much less drain it. I mean, he took, I think, three jumpers in his whole time at Texas, and he made two that game, and he had a mid range shot, and then he made a three, and then he. And then the following game, he attempted a few more jumpers as well. And this dude, I love it. I love the fearlessness about him. And I think he has a long way to go when it comes to filling out his frame and getting stronger. And you could see that on the defensive end where he's picked up a lot of fouls just by not being strong enough to maintain position. And he's been bullied out of the way for defensive rebounds, which I think he has a lot to work on. But, hey, he registered a double-double for the first time. I mean, he didn't register a double-double at all while he was in college, and he had a double-double, his third game here with the Pelicans. So this guy is rapidly improving. I love his offensive feel for the game. I think it's one of those things like with AD, you know, everyone kind of projected AD to be like this defensive monster coming out of college, but his offensive game was much further ahead than his defense was.
It's like shades of, and this is, I'm not saying they're the same player, but same school. It's shades of Miles Turner, because that was similar to experience that I saw with Miles Turner at Texas and different coaches too. Shaka Smart came a little bit after that, but it was Turner. I don't know if he took like 1-3 for Texas. I don't know what the double doubles, but he was not a numbers guy. He didn't pile up the stats. I guess kind of similar to AD in the sense that AD, I mean, he was never a big scorer for Kentucky, but these guys, it just goes to show like how much scouting matters. You can't really use the, like any raw stats to project out how these guys might perform at the next level. And I think Hayes is your next example of that.
Yeah. I'm ridiculously excited about Hayes. I still don't anticipate him getting much minutes for the Pelicans this year. I don't think he's ready for that unless it's garbage time or the season's out of hand.
Yep.
I would definitely want him to really focus on the body development aspect this season, and hopefully we can get him some run in Erie, which is surprising because I feel the opposite way about Nikhil Alexander Walker. I want him to be the de facto backup point guard. And yeah. Do you disagree?
I mean, I think it's de facto at this point because I don't know what the better option is.
True.
If your argument now is that they should forego trying to find that player because they have it in Nikhil Alexander Walker, I guess I got to see a little bit more in a non-summer league environment, and that's tough because by that point you're not necessarily locked into your team, but there's a couple more months have passed and you haven't made any changes, but. But yeah, I know. I just got to see a little bit more. But at this point, yeah. I mean, I would rather see what he has than Frank Jackson. If Frank Jackson's still the exact same player that he has been, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know who else is who is more equipped for it on this current roster than him.
So yeah, my argument is that they should forego finding a backup point guard per se. But I do think that they need to add another ball handler playmaker on the wing. That's why I've been a huge fan of the Iguodala edition. I think we heard David Griffin wanted to make a play for Justice Winslow when the Miami-Philadelphia sign-and-trade talks are going on for Jimmy Butler. And who knows, maybe Miami will still end up moving Winslow if they trade for Chris Paul, or just to get some sort of cap relief, because right now they, I think they're a little bit into the tax. Their ability to make moves aren't very they don't have much flexibility to make moves, and they are hard capped this season because of the sign and trade that they conducted. So yeah, it's an interesting situation there, and I think in each one more for Justice Winslow swap makes a lot of sense, because I think Miami does need shooting, and especially with Jimmy Butler, and each one more is a good expiring for them that'll save them money from the few million dollars they need to get back under that tax line.
Mm-hmm.
From Winslow's contract.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Winslow fan, especially watching him down the stretch when Miami started moving him to more of a point guard role. He thrived, and I would love that addition. I would think that maybe it takes a little bit more than just your boy Etuan to make something like that happen. I mean, the Jimmy Butler trade certainly does expedite their timeline a little bit. It makes you want to add pieces around him now, and then. Yeah, I don't know. I would certainly love to have a guy like Winslow here, even if it's like just to run the second unit and throw him out there in long, versatile wing heavy lineups. Any of that sounds good to me. But yeah, I don't know. I need to see a little bit more in different sort of playing environments for Alexander Walker than Summer League.
No, for sure.
Yeah, it's tough for me. But to your point, I don't think I would ever really give up anything of serious value to go find that backup point guard position, especially when you've got a guy like Drew who's playing next to Lonzo, who can also play some point guard minutes. And then I think they've got enough there to make do, even if the worst case scenario happens and like Alexander Walker doesn't pan out. But yeah, I wouldn't go overboard to try to find that guy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in one of the many interviews that have come out this past week or so, it was said that Griff views Alexander Walker as a point guard. So mm-hmm. That's interesting to me. And I think his versatility is definitely key, because he has what looks to be a very competent 3-point shot. And so his ability to play both on and off the ball, I think, is going to be important, because he did play off the ball a lot in college. Mm-hmm. And that ability will translate well with that additional ball handler that we've been talking about on the wing position. But my thing with him is I want to give him all the opportunity to fail. And if he fails, then, you know, you make adjustments, but you throw him into the fire and see what happens. Kind of like what Utah did with Donovan Mitchell, kind of what Portland did with Damian Lillard. And I know these aren't the same examples per se, because those guys definitely had much bigger roles going in. But at the same time, because it's a smaller role, I think you can afford more flexibility and just be like, hey, you're the guy off the bench. You set the pace, you set the offense, you set the table. Let's see what you got.
Yeah. And another thing is, he's not your stereotypical 1 year in college NBA lottery pick. I know he wasn't a lottery pick, but pretty close. But I mean, he played 2 years at Virginia Tech. He's going to be 21 in a couple of months. So he's not as raw as a guy like, say, Jackson Hayes, or even other guys who are just 1 year out of school. So there's a little more experience there that I think that matters too.
No, for sure. For sure. I'm excited. And we haven't even talked about Didi Lozada, who I think he gives me major Danny Green or even Wesley Matthew vibes, because Wesley Matthew could do a little bit more with the ball and for himself than Danny Green could. But at the end of the day, he looks like that prototypical 3-and-D wing. And one of the things that Trajan mentioned about Didi is he's really excited about Didi from a body development standpoint. He said he has a big frame. He has a lot to fill out. And he said, we're going to see a different Didi in 365 days after he's done playing in Australia in the NBL, which, again, I also think that's a good opportunity for him to both continue playing at a pretty high level league against some good competition, but also it's a good opportunity for him to, I think they said that they're going to use that as an opportunity to continue teaching him English. So there's less of a language barrier, but man, I mean, I'm so impressed by this guy's ability to operate on defense, given that there is a language barrier, because people talk about how communication is often the key. I'm sure the Pelican staff has done a tremendous job of simplifying things, in terms of calls or signals or whatever that are easy to pick up. that don't take too much to learn, but he switches seamlessly. He fights over screens, and just at the end of the game, this last game in overtime, he had that game sealing steal where he was absolutely glued to Miami's Duncan Robinson. I mean, this guy, I'm very excited for him moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think just looking overall, if we look at the guys who the Pelicans have gone after, even down to the undrafted free agents who they added, I mean, all these guys, you're looking at a different size profile for the Pelicans than you've seen in years past. Like, I don't know I don't think there's anyone that's going to be severely undersized at their positions on this entire roster. And I think that's something that really hasn't been the case for New Orleans in years past. I'm not saying they should be drafting or grabbing these guys purely because of how, you know, what their size looks like, what their wingspan looks like, but it's nice to have that, you know, kind of comforting feeling of there's no one's ever going to be overmatched by, you know, 3 or 4 inches or 30, 40 pounds at a certain position. And I feel like they're putting together the right types of NBA bodies to really make teams work really hard on both ends.
I'm telling you, man, Etuan Moore is the smallest player on the team right now.
That might be – is that Frank probably, but
– Frank's like 6'4", 6'5".
Is he that tall?
Yeah.
All right. I'll let you have this one. Just more Etuan Moore slander for you.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, not much longer for this team, in my opinion. Then it's a new wave. If they move Etuan Moore – I'm trying to think if there's like any Dell signing left, and there is. It's Kenrich and Ja outside of Drew, you know? It's Drew, Kenrich, and Ja. And I guess technically Darius Miller as well.
Yeah. Huh. Yep. Some crazy turnover, that's for sure.
Major roster turnover. But you were talking about continuity and kind of tampering expectations in the season.
Did you say tampering expectations? Because that's great.
I wish. No, tempering. Expectations. What were the points that you were trying to make there?
So talked about that just in the sense of I feel like people are, and it's really hard not to get excited with this, especially with the last few months of this organization just consistently doing the right things. And the only call out I wanted to make there was that it's this stuff typically takes time, especially on the defensive end. And I think This Pelicans team, their ML from the get-go is going to be run, which is great. And I think that's something that you just you get through training camp, you get through preseason, and I think you already start to have enough comfort on that end, just playing kind of free form, you know, just out hustling other teams. I think that's fine, but I think some of the other there's going to be a learning curve in the half court, especially on the defensive end, and communicating is so key. I mean, it's cliche to think back to the grit and grind Grizzlies, but those guys played together for years and they built up that defensive fortitude over a long period of time. And I think that's not something that just clicks from the start. And I think this Pelicans team has the talent and the potential to be a top 10 defensive team. Maybe once they get a little bit more experience, top 5 as well. But it's not going to happen immediately. I think it might be tough at the start. People might start asking questions about what's going on. We thought they had all this good defensive talent. To be clear, I'm not saying they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league to start the year and suddenly drive all the way up to top 10. I just think it may not click as quickly as some are hoping that it will. But I think the way for them to counteract that is to really continue to push the pace and transition and avoid putting themselves in a position where they might be exposed. But it's just something I've been thinking about.
You think a way to counteract that more efficiently would just to keep be scooping up Duke players?
In the sense that they all know Coach K's system?
Yeah, it's all about the continuity and familiarity and what do they call it, the brotherhood. So I think Justice Winslow, that bill, just keep getting Duke players.
Yeah, because they all played together on the same Duke team. That makes a lot of sense. Out
for us in Kentucky players. I mean, honestly, like, look, we had all of them. Boogie Cousins, Terrence Jones.
With great results to show for it.
Miller, DeAndre Liggins. Was Archie Goodwin a Kentucky player?
I'm going to default and say yes. Okay, don't know for sure.
Great. But works out. All right, man. I don't have much to really talk about. I think the Pelicans have a decent chance of winning this Summer League championship, but you got a feel for them. They've been playing a ton of games, and the legs are probably shot. So we'll see how that works out for them. Griff has been all over the media talking about the Pelicans, and I think his message has largely been the same. And it's about ownership's commitment and what they're trying to accomplish as a franchise and how they're trying to really emphasize the process over results. So I think it's been good. I think it's been tremendous PR. I think the more he's front-facing, the better the perception of the organization. I think they quickly realized that because it is, you know, a departure from the way they operated in the past, which was not really say anything and let the media talk about whatever they want to talk about. This way he's really controlling the conversation, controlling the message, setting the table.
Yeah, and also taking shots where he can. I mean, that was one of the first things he told Woj was, I think, set off some alarm bells throughout the rest of NBA followers, where he said, I don't believe you can be a truly special executive in our business if you don't have a relationship with ownership. We're all pulling in the same direction all the time. Ownership is the single biggest competitive advantage we have in the league. And Cavs fans immediately popped their heads up like, oh, I see what he's trying to do there. But there's a lot of stuff like that embedded in the interview with Woj, and it was a lot of great stuff. And exactly like you just said, it was having to do with the relationship with ownership and just feeling like he's anything he wants to get done will get done, and that has to go a long way. And just the fact that there's a shared vision throughout the entire organization. I think he used that term a couple times, and having a shared vision. So.
This is huge from a culture building standpoint, because how many franchises do you have where the number one pick walks in and the pressure isn't immediately on that player? And then there's also several talented rookies providing that upward pressure for him to continue to be great, but also give him support because they're part of the same class, they're part of the same cohort. So they're in this together. They're getting better together. It's such a unique situation. And clearly the front office has spent much time and resources putting together this environment.
Yep. Yeah. No further comment. I mean, it's really fun. And it feels like we've been doing is celebrating this franchise, and there haven't been any real games yet. But there won't be any real games for another.
Games are won in the summer. In the off season and in summer league, if you win that, you don't need to win anything else. Just look at the Lakers. They have been extremely successful in summer league, and look at them. They now haven't made the playoff in years.
Yeah. Let's wrap with this stuff. Have you seen this stuff coming out recently? Or not coming out, but have you seen these Giannis AD comparisons being made by Lakers fans?
It's a little bit absurd. That being said, though, like, I'm definitely on the other side. People are going to probably hate me for saying this. I still take AD in a playoff series over Giannis. I think AD is really good, and I think he was having arguably a better season than Giannis before he was injured. I'm not injured, per se. I mean, I guess the injury kind of kicked it off, right? But the trade request. Before the trade request, I think people are quick to attribute team success, which is fine, and I think is a fair argument to a certain extent. But I think AD is that good. That's all I'm going to say about it, because I think it's probably a very heated conversation, not between us, but in general. I would rather AD in a playoff series than Giannis.
Interesting. I don't agree, but also I feel like I feel like the comparisons in their game is more what I was kind of losing my mind about.
Yeah, AD is like, they were talking about AD being Giannis with a jump shot, which is they don't play the same at all.
No, it's not. It's like, it's not polar opposites, but man, there's so much different there. And I don't know.
That is like the most laziest comparison, because you just see two tall athletic dudes that are really good at finishing and dunking, and you're like, oh, well, this guy can shoot and this guy can't. And it's like, well, Giannis is AD with a handle, and it's like, that doesn't really make sense either. You know what I mean? So it's a stupid comparison. The Lakers fans, I mean, do you expect anything more from them?
No. But I guess I will say that I am excited to see AD in the playoffs again and what he's going to do, because he is obviously he's a special talent.
I'm for him not to make the playoffs, but you're right. I would be excited. I am excited for him to get a bigger stage.
Yeah, and just
for better or for worse.
Yeah, just see what he can do, given that platform again. I mean, obviously he did a lot with the Pelicans against the Blazers, but you could argue, I wouldn't argue Drew did more, but Drew was certainly, you know, almost as important as AD was in that series. So really.
You mean
really
it wasn't Rondo?
What? God, okay. It's time to wrap this up.
Okay. All right. This has been In the Know. Thanks for listening, folks.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.